Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Chris Fetters of DogBand.com, and I'm here with Scott Eklund, Kim Grinnell. Scott, I don't know, a little under the weather today. I think the allergies kicked in pretty hard for him. So he'll be with us tomorrow, but we did want to catch up, and I know it's a late one, especially for those on the East Coast. Get ready for some of those late night. We didn't know there was going to be late night practices.
No.
Late night games, maybe, but late night practices, we weren't ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to give you just our initial thoughts and kind of what's going on and in terms of what we saw. What, right around 2 hours, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, if you include pre-practice and then warm-ups and all that different stuff, it was probably closer to like 2 hours and 45 minutes. But, I mean, that's just them out there goofing around mostly. I don't want to say goofing around, but they're not doing anything serious or anything until right about 5 o'clock. So, yeah, I'd say right about 2 hours.
Yeah, because the stretching took place right around 3, but I came in like maybe a little after quarter after, so maybe 40, 45 minutes ahead, and there were already guys working out and doing stuff. So, yeah, I think, you know, when it's all said and done, these practices can go a while. But we've done this for a long time, and so you get a sense for kind of where the soft spots are going to be, where there's going to be a little bit of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, working on special teams, stuff like that. So, but in general, what were your overriding thoughts, maybe compare and contrast?
Well, one of the things, obviously, you know, we're used to 2 years of Kalen DeBoer and what his program was. And I remember the first practice that we did of theirs, and we were like, okay, what's this? You know, because they're going full team session literally right after stretching. They're doing a full team session. And we always kind of gauged it as this is just a thing to get the juices flowing. See where they're at from the install. Get the juices flowing a little bit. Do one with the first unit one way, one with the second unit the other way, and then they call it good and they go into team drills and all that different stuff. The other thing, besides the defensive line, Kalen DeBoer and his staff stayed exclusively on the main Husky field. And the defensive line would go over to the East field because that's where all of the padding was for the, you know, for the defensive linemen to extend their arms and do all those kind of things. I'm doing the hand motions that people aren't seeing. But anyway, this was a little bit different. Obviously, they're each going to have their own styles and their own way of doing things. You know, I thought it was a pretty crisp practice, but I also there was no opening get the juices flowing moment. It went right into special teams work.
Yeah.
And then they split off anytime they wanted to do 7-on-7 or one-on-one stuff or Skelly or whatever you want to call it. They went to the Dempsey to do that with the quarterbacks, receivers, running backs, tight ends, and defensive backs and linebackers. And then the lines would stay on the field. It was just a little bit different doing it. And so you have to run to the Dempsey and watch that. And then, by the way, it was chilly today, so it wasn't bad going into the Dempsey.
Yeah.
They had the heat on in the Dempsey, so that was a little bit nice. But you know, overall, I thought it was pretty good. I saw a freshman quarterback not look like a freshman out there. You know, Damon Williams might be small. He is not a big guy. He has a good frame on a small short body, right? But he can throw the ball. I mean, he throws a pretty deep ball. He was on target. He made good reads. You know, he was probably, in my opinion, the most impressive person out there today. Not that Will Rogers didn't look good, and we'll talk, I'm sure, a little bit about him and his day and everything like that. But Damon Williams is the one who just kind of was like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that at all. And so that's kind of what I just saw just off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know people are going to want to try to compare the old staff to the new staff, their methods versus these guys' methods and what have you. But comparing last year's first practice when you had Michael Penix Jr. quarterback.
In his second year.
You had Mateo Mele at center, at least starting in spring. Mm-hmm. You had a fully formed offensive line with two tackles that, you know,
that are going to the NFL now. Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be, we knew they were going to be really good, but they turned out maybe arguably even better than what we had thought. So you had all that going on against now a team with brand new starting quarterbacks, brand new centers, basically brand new offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to me, comparing what's going on with DeBoer's staff and Fish's staff is so random anyways, because it feels like you're comparing apples to, like, I don't know, well, hand grenades.
If you go back to 2022, maybe it's a little more comparable because that was DeBoer's first.
That makes more sense. Scrimmage. Yes.
First thing, Michael Penix wasn't. I mean, he was splitting times with Sam Heward and with Dylan Morris, and did not. I honestly didn't see anything special from Michael Penix during that spring ball, and even in fall camp, you know, we didn't see a ton of special stuff from him. The special stuff came out when he started playing in the games, you know, and then last year they had most of the team back aside from the guys who couldn't play anymore. There was no one that left early. Everybody came back. And so you had a very veteran team who had a ton of experience coming back. A lot of guys who are going to the NFL playing on that team. This year's team might have guys 2 or 3, maybe 4 years from now playing in the NFL. But right now, none of these guys are ones that are being projected really high, at the very least. So I think it's better to compare this year to 2022 and what Kalen DeBoer did, injecting his program into things, because that's what Jed Fish is doing.
Yeah, and then also it's interesting because there was, I mean, they've talked about this, the kind of the pro element. You know, his experience in the NFL, bringing in NFL coordinators, guys with a ton of NFL experience, today had an NFL feel about it. It had a feel in the way it was organized, guys going to different fields, doing different things. You noted it right off the top, Scott, none of the black, even though it was shorts and no pads. It was still like they had their game jerseys on.
Yeah.
They had their names on the back. This is the first time I've ever seen names on the back of spring jerseys, ever.
Practice jerseys in general,
yeah. I've never seen it before. Gray, uniform gray, kind of those tight shorts, like the padding you would wear underneath your actual pants, game pants. So they had those on, and it just looked uniform. It looked, and even though I would say, he said he talked about going things full speed a little bit. I didn't really see a lot of full speed work myself. I saw a lot of half speed work, and more to the point, when he really focused on fundamentals, like the early times, like when you guys talked to him during signing day and on those types of things, when you first got an opportunity to talk to Jed Fish about what his plan was and what he really wanted to focus on, especially with the coordinators, hiring the coordinators. The element and the focus on fundamentals was extreme, and you could really see it on full display. Like, for instance, with DeBoer, they would have some special team stripes drill where they would work on fundamental stuff like stripping the ball out and recovering, or those types of things, going after things. These guys had 5 stations at one point going, 5 different stations, and they had everybody. They had the punters and the kickers doing the sled. They had form tackling drills. They had retracing type drills. They had mirror type drills. I mean, when you talk about fundamentals, I mean, it felt like it was going back into like high school type stuff. And this one, when they say day one, he really fully meant this was day one.
Yeah.
And he talked in the press conference afterwards, because it was just Jed Fish today that spoke to the media. He talked about when you go to the Dempsey Indoor, they like the idea of going in and just doing the offensive stuff there in the passing game, because then they can throw those verts, they can throw those go routes, they can throw whatever they want up and down the field without the defense trying to run into the defense and doing that kind of thing. And the other thing I thought was really, really interesting too that he talked about is that I don't think he was fully aware of what the practice setup was here when he took the job, because if he would have known that you almost have to practice at Husky Stadium in order to get these things done, It wouldn't have changed things, but it may have altered his thoughts, because he says he always looks at playing in the stadium as playing in a sacred place, mm-hmm. which I think most fans yeah. would agree with. But for us in the media, we've gotten so used to every single team playing inside there because there's just no space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're fighting up against like Washington, you're fighting up against the Cut. Mm-hmm. There's no way to go north, because you go north, you run right into all the stuff with the facilities, baseball, whatever. There's never been room there. Mm-hmm. So they've had to practice at Husky Stadium. But he's like, oh, that's sacred ground. I don't like having to practice there that often. So I think they're still very much in the thick of mm-hmm. trying to figure out exactly how they're going to game plan this spring. And it won't surprise me at all if they continue to kind of use this three field yeah. rotation between Husky Stadium and the East Field and Dempsey. And
look, on a cold day like today, I wasn't complaining that I got to go inside and be out of the wind and everything like that. But it would be nice just to go over to the East Field. You know, just it seems like it's a quicker transition, you know, instead of.
Well, sometimes in the spring and sometimes even in the fall in the past, we've been able to go up to the top yeah. of the East bleachers, and you could get both. Mm-hmm. So basically, you just look to the east, you can see mm-hmm. the East Field, turn around, and now you've got the vantage point of looking right yeah. into Husky Stadium heading west. So that was always fun.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, if you want to do that, we can do that too. But I think there's going to be some tweaking.
Yeah, I mean, he'll do his thing, and we'll see what works. What's really weird is, to me, the weirdest thing about this thing is practicing in the afternoon. I can't remember the last time we were doing. I don't know if we've ever done spring ball in the afternoon.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if there was maybe a time with the staff, a particular staff, where it may have been even more fall ball than spring. Mm-hmm. That, you know, maybe if they were doing some, they wouldn't have done them all in the afternoon. They mm-hmm. may have singled out some particular ones for a very specific reason. But, yeah, generally speaking, I've never heard the idea. Because I think Jed Fish threw out the idea of, like, I've never seen a game played at, like, 8 o'clock in the morning or whatever. And I'm thinking, well, the last team that just did this went to the national championship game. Yeah. You're sitting here telling me they got it wrong?
And honestly, I'm going to be honest with you. There were times when I was just like, well, if you want to get the players used to playing at the time they normally play, then afternoon does seem make sense, right? But on the other hand, it's just with the way schedules work out and stuff like that, you know, I thought it was kind of locked in that it was always going to be in the morning, because of the way the players have their schedules worked out. And those schedules were worked out before Jed Fish might have even got here, you know, for some of those guys. So I don't know. But anyway, the other thing, I remember Sark having some evening practices as well. So
yeah.
That was – I remember the one when Deontay Cooper blew out his knee on the sidelines, and it was a late evening, early night practice.
And if I remember, Sark – pretty much said the kind of the same thing that Fish would have said and paraphrased mm-hmm. that, you know, if you're going to play at night, you might as well practice at night, at least from time to time to get the feel for it.
What's going to be real interesting is once we get to the season, if they are going to practice in the afternoon, that's fine. But, or, you know, like the, you know, 3 o'clock or whatever, we don't get to watch those.
No,
right.
Never have.
So
maybe we will.
Will we have player availability in the morning like we're used to? Player and coach availability in the morning like we're used to, and then they practice at night and don't have anything to do from a media standpoint afterwards? Or are we going to have to wait until, I don't know, 7 o'clock at night in order to do our interviews? That's
Scott, come on, you know how this works.
They
hurry up and wait, man. That's how we roll.
It is the Huskies' world, and we are just existing in it.
It's anybody else's world. Yeah. We're living in it. We just hurry up and wait. That's how we live.
We are here when we're told.
That's right. So and we even try to get here before time.
Let's get back to spring ball.
What I was going to say is I definitely did not want to skip over some of the real key things that I saw that I felt were kind of new in the process. But going back, you know, let's start with those quarterbacks, because I think those are going to be a big focal point of what people are going to want to talk about today. And, you know, he made a point of, yeah, there's no depth chart. You know, you look at the offensive and defensive lines. He said, you know, someone was asking him, you know, are you concerned, you know, and he goes, I would be concerned only if there wasn't a chance to add players, you know, with mm-hmm. the portal, which they have an opportunity to do.
They should be, because that offensive line is not ready I mean, not even when I say not ready, I mean, it would be bad if they had to start this group.
None of them have any aside. I don't even know if they have any playing time under their belts, let alone starts.
Aside from Drew Azzopardi.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah. I mean, everybody else has. I mean, you had Pocky Finau playing left guard.
Yeah.
With the first unit.
Yeah.
I mean, he's gonna be good.
Yeah.
Now.
And this time last year, if you would have told me that Zachary Henning was gonna be a center,
I know,
I'd be like, that doesn't sound right.
I thought guard or tackle. Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
Guard or right tackle.
And I think we at least got one of the things answered. And again, this could be just a function of the bodies in play. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't read too much into it, but it does feel like Brendan Carroll likes to have flexibility where he's not looking left or right side. He's mm-hmm. looking inside, outside.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are a tackle, you learn both tackle positions. If you're a guard or a center, you learn all three. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those, because sometimes you get offensive line coaches that are, you know, they want you to be a left-sided player. Whether it's a guard or a tackle, that's where you're at, and right side, same.
We've had, 7 years of Scott Huff? Who rotated guys through at all different positions. And, you know, it's like they say, there is no depth chart at this point in the thing. And we try to tell people this, but people will.
Yeah.
Don't read anything into who, aside from the quarterback who's taken the first reps,
yeah.
I wouldn't read anything into anybody else on the team. You know, Ephesians Prysock's probably going to be one of your first team guys. Jonah Coleman's probably going to be your first team running back, and Drew Azzopardi's probably one of your starting tackles. But other than that, with the portal, we've already mentioned there's going to be a ton of portal activity for the Huskies. But it's not just that. They're just seeing who works best, who picks things up quickest, who, you know, all these different things. So just because Elijah Jackson was running with the twos today does not mean that Thaddeus Dixon is necessarily ahead of him. It just means we want to see Thaddeus run opposite Ephesians, and then we'll see what happens with the other two, which was Jordan Shaw and Elijah Jackson.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's for sure. And I'm, you know, you're talking about a guy that started 15 straight games last year for a team that went to the national championship game.
And made a play to send them to
there you go. The so national championship. So I think he's got a chance to get the other starting spot.
Yeah.
But as Jed Fish would point out, and he's talked about it before, so he's kind of a broken record on it. He goes, this program is based on competition. He wants everybody to compete on everything every day. So fully expect that competition to join ranks here, you know, as they ramp up. But I didn't see a ton of full stuff. I saw a lot of getting back to the basics, a lot of getting back to the basics, and a lot of three-quarter and just a lot of run-through type pace. Just getting the schemes down and whatnot. Fish said himself at the end of practice, you know, if they could get 80 to 85% of the offense and defense dialed in scheme-wise and the playbook and everything else, that would be a success. That would be a success for them this spring. But you know, going back to quarterbacks real quick, finishing that up, just because they didn't go full speed and didn't see a ton of throwing and stuff, I kind of liked what each one brought. I think Will Rogers and Demarcus Davis, they both kind of looked the same a little bit physically. Rogers obviously filled out a little bit more. He's more mature, older player.
What, 23?
Yeah. 21, and 22. But, man, when you put them side to side with DeMond Williams, it's like DeMond Williams is just straight out of the Russell Wilson mold.
Yeah.
I mean, he just looks like that body type from
afar. He's got a good frame on him, even though he's small.
Yeah, Noah Fifita. Sure. I mean, same type of guy.
Yeah.
Same type of guy. And, you know, Fish raved about him today. I think you could rave about him. I think he made some good plays. Like you said, Scott, didn't necessarily look like a freshman out there. He was the one that took the second series when they did do kind of the full team at the end. To me, there were some hit and miss moments. You know, missing some receivers down the field and things like that. But you know, first practice, and to be honest with you, for a first practice, true freshman, the whole bit, still pretty impressive to even have any sort of command of the offense and just what they're asking those guys to do.
And so. His deep ball is so pretty. Oh, my gosh, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Penix threw a pretty deep ball. Sam Heward threw a really pretty deep ball. This guy is on par with those, if not better. I mean, it is so pretty. is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's got arm strength to burn, no problem. I think Will Rogers can run this offense just as well. Mm-hmm. I think there's just in terms of what they're doing. Fish talked a little bit about the conversations that he had with him and his parents, like his dad's a football coach and what have you, and they just leaned on the mm-hmm. experience that they have with guys that have gone through the offense in the NFL and the Sean McVay school and the Shanahan school and all that stuff that they've talked about in the past. So I think they'll be in good shape with the offensive line, or with the offense in terms of mm-hmm. the quarterback. But it's going to start up front. And I'm going to get your thoughts on this, Scott, real quick before we move to the defensive side of the ball. How do you think it's going to work where a lot of the teams are already done with spring or just mm-hmm. finishing up spring?
Yeah.
Portal starts on the 15th. Washington's going to get the benefit of being able to bring in players while they're practicing mm-hmm. to kind of give them the full flavor. But yet they're going to be players here.
Yeah.
That are going to have to make decisions yeah. before spring is even done.
Yep.
I mean, and we're not talking about like the last week of spring.
Mm-hmm.
They may have to make it like in the middle of camp.
Like April 15th.
Do you ultimately think this is going to end up being is the timing of this thing ultimately going to be a good thing or a bad thing?
I think this year it's going to be a negative. I honestly don't know why they don't do the portal in early May. They did it last year and it worked just fine. I don't understand why it has to be middle of April, but they obviously have their reasons. Doesn't mean it's right. Just means
East
it
Coast
is
bias.
What it is. Yeah, East Coast bias.
South bias.
Yeah, but I said it in my blog this morning. Guys are going to be declaring. You're going to see Huskies declare for the portal. Now, does that mean they have to stop practicing? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think you're going to find situations where they're going to sit down with not just Coach Fish, but the coordinators and their mm-hmm. position coaches. And I think they're going to have real heart-to-hearts about the idea of like, look, I got to protect myself.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go in the portal so I'm available, but yet I still want to make sure I have the option to return. So let me play. Mm-hmm. Let me be a part of this thing. And then let me mm-hmm. sort it out like basically like a few days before the spring game. Because mm-hmm. that's going to be the end of the very
But that, time. That's just them entering the portal.
But that's
they can sign with a school anytime after
but
that.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying is you've got 2 weeks to make that determination.
Oh, I got
you. You've got two weeks to have these conversations
mm-hmm.
so that by right before spring game, they can know, okay, is it tenable for me to go in the portal, still be a part of this team, and not, you know, adversely disrupt what's going on in the position groups and what have you. Because I think it could be a nasty situation.
Oh, absolutely could be. And you know, the thing is, the coaches aren't going to love the fact that some of these guys want to go on the portal. Some of them, they're going to be like, yeah, it's a good call by them. And they can practice with us. We still need the bodies. We'll let them get reps and everything like that. But once spring is over with, we'll, you know, salute them, say thanks for your service, and good luck.
Yeah, the one
but
thing...
But there's a lot that if they decide to go in, the coaches aren't going to be happy.
Yeah. I was going to say, though, I think the one thing you hope for, Scott, is that the self-awareness is there. Like you know, it's a clean, mm-hmm. it's clear, they don't have to be told. You know, it's mm-hmm. If you know you're, you know, if you're past it,
mm-hmm.
you don't have to be told. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, I know it's my time to hang it up or my time to do something different. Hopefully the self-awareness is there for a lot of these guys so that they can make it easy for the coaches to not have to worry about making those tough decisions and those tough conversations.
Yeah, I agree.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Real quick, we need to talk about, just not go too long, Jonah Coleman.
Yeah.
Tank.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm not sure I've seen a Washington running back built quite like him.
Yeah. I mean, 5'9", 225 is what he's listed at, but he looked like 5'9", 235, 240 to me. His legs are tree trunks.
To say that he looks built low to the ground is almost, it's not even close to what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
It's, when I first saw him run the ball, I was like, how can anybody wrap this guy up? Yeah. There's nothing to wrap up. Mm-hmm. You can't get to his legs.
Yeah.
They're hardly there.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just absolute tree trunks. And yeah, I just, an amazing build.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of the most successful NFL running backs are like 5'9", 220.
Yeah.
5'10", 220.
You see it all the time.
5'8". Yeah. Maurice Jones-Drew was what, 5'8", 5'7" and a half?
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
He did look a little bit like Maurice Jones-Drew.
Yeah, but he's crazy. Like I said, I've seen smaller running backs that have been built strong but I've never seen a guy built quite like that. I mean, absolute tank.
I know. And then the exact opposite of that is Tybo Rogers, who does not look like that, but he's filled out a little bit. You can see he's bigger, and he looked very explosive.
I was going to say, is it just me, or is it because he's wearing a single digit? He looks a lot faster now.
I know. I saw you write that in the thread. But
four instead of 20, man.
He looked very fast.
Yeah, I think he looked fast.
Getting the ball. I'm sorry, I know you're kind of guiding this, but at receiver, Rashid Williams gets first team reps. I think he is a future star. It might not happen this year, but I think before he leaves Washington, he will be one of the most respected receivers in the Big Ten Conference before he leaves. Yeah. I mean, I think he's right up there. He could be playing at any university in this country, and he chose Washington. His big drawback was his injury history. He wasn't able to stay healthy all through his junior year. That's why he didn't elicit as much attention as maybe he should have gotten. And then, but Washington gets him, and he looked outstanding. I thought Keith Reynolds looks pretty good.
Yeah, he looked good.
Giles Jackson.
And again, Keith Reynolds dropped from 89 to 15 with his number. He looks fast.
Yeah. So Giles Jackson looks good. He's back at 5, not 0 anymore. I thought the receivers looked pretty good. I was honestly surprised not to see Jeremiah Hunter running with the ones. He was running with the twos. But
he looks good.
Oh my gosh, he just looks so smooth. He's number 6, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I mean, he looks so smooth, caught almost everything. He did have one that was ripped away at the end of practice by Leroy Bryant.
Great play.
That would have been a touchdown. But great play by Leroy Bryant. But he caught a couple contested passes, which that's kind of his thing. Is he's a lot like Romo Dunze in the fact that he can make contested catches.
So that play by Leroy Bryant tonight against Jeremiah Hunter kind of had the feels of the Elijah Jackson play against Andy Mitchell in the in the Sugar Bowl, but instead of being on the back pylon, it was in the front. Well, and instead of it being a jump ball type of situation, this was more where it was down kind of by the hip. Uh-huh. And Hunter looked like he had it, and Bryant just smacked it out of his hand, and the defense went nuts.
Yeah.
It was a really good play.
Really good play. So let's move to defense.
Yeah, absolutely. So starting with the defensive line, good to see some of those bigger bodies in there. I think this is one of the first springs where I've seen – every big body that was supposed to be in there, that was expected to return, actually be there. Plus, guys like Sebastian Valdez, Bryce Butler, and he's big.
I did not see Bryce Butler. I didn't notice him. I noticed Valdez, though. He is impressive.
Yeah, Butler's definitely in there. It was great to see the brothers in there, the Parker brothers. And
Vannis has trimmed down a little bit, too.
He's trimmed down a little bit, and Elenius Davis was in there doing things. So they've got some bodies.
Yeah, and Voy Tanufi,
let's, for the record, playing straight inside, like three technique. They weren't moving him around at all.
No, he might eventually, but today
he Today didn't. He wasn't. Yeah. Today he wasn't. Today, and maybe that's just a body situation. Yeah. But it was good to see that
group. Could use another space eater in there, but I liked what I saw. I think they've got a group that they can work with if they're not able to fly. I mean, obviously Philip Bleedy, the guy from the University of Indiana, who's going to be here on an official visit, they would like to get him in the mix.
And he's coming up in the next few days.
Yeah, he's coming up this weekend for an official visit, and I'm sure they'd love to get him in the boat. And that it makes sense; he's a talented guy, but. Washington's has a lot of bodies there, and I think they're a little more on the underrated side, even though they still do want to go out and get somebody.
Yeah, for sure. And then, looking at the edge guys, you know, Russell Davis was a guy, he looked like he was getting some individual work, and then he spent some time doing some conditioning as well on the side with Anthony James as well. So
Anthony James is more a D-tackle now, though.
It's interesting, though. I couldn't tell if he was working in the position drills as an edge guy or as a D-lineman. It looked to me like it was with the edges. But, he looks like he might be a little bigger, but it's so hard to tell.
Well, he had a torn labrum last year.
Right.
And they didn't do any surgery on it until before the bowl game.
Yeah.
So.
But Zach Durfee and Maurice Himes were the first ones that I saw. Mm-hmm.
They were jumped the out. Ones. Yeah.
And then right behind them would have been Holtzclaw.
And Lane.
And Jacob Lane. And I'll tell you what, a guy that just jumped out to me, and I don't know if it's growth spurt or just getting bigger, faster, stronger, or I don't know what it was, but Milton Hopkins. Mm-hmm. I think Milton Hopkins just looked good today. He moved around really well, and he just looks the part. He's a bigger version of Holtzclaw to me.
I never really noticed him today. It doesn't mean – it's just whatever you're looking at, you know, when he makes a play. So,
I was just, again, because of just – with all the new number stuff, and again, he didn't have a new number.
He was number 14,
But just trying to assimilate and looking at the body types and looking and seeing, he was just one guy. I was like, my eyes kept gravitating every once in a while. I was like, okay, Hopkins, he looks pretty good.
It's not just that. We're used to, for 2 years of DeBoer, purple was offense.
Yeah.
White was defense.
Yeah.
And it's flipped. Yeah. Now, I think Lake and Peterson used to flip-flop those.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's for us, it's just like we've got to get used to a whole new thing. No one's weeping for us. I get that. But, you know, it's confusing when you're trying to watch all these guys and you think it's one guy and you're just like, oh, yeah. Especially when Denzel Boston and Tristan Dunn, both number 12s.
Yeah.
And I know one is a little darker skinned than the other one, but – with the way the sun was hitting them.
And from a distance, it's not
they look like the same guy.
Yeah, from a distance, it's not nearly as easy to tell
as
you might
think.
They look
like the exact same guy.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's done. Yeah. So
moving to linebacker, clearly Bruner and Zotupatalo were right in there to start. And then Fowler was right in there as well. I don't remember if Brian Parham was with Fowler in that particular group.
I didn't see him.
Because he was definitely there and was working. To me, it's interesting. I look at Parham and I look at Kamori House, and they look very similar in stature right off the bat.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're going to use them in a similar way, but they look similar. Jordan Whitney, much bigger
this year
than he was last year. And we'll find out.
Did he not look like he was running that well?
Didn't look great.
No.
Didn't look fluid.
He had a sleeve on his right knee.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's just him getting not back to 100% yet, but good enough to practice, but not.
And we'll see it. Well, obviously, this is first time out.
I just don't want you to get too bulky. I just don't want it to be because he's too bulky.
Yeah, we'll see in a week. We'll see in a week how that goes because you just don't know. You just don't know. I mean, he could come out flying in a week and he'd go kill everybody.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
Yeah.
So it was good to see those guys. And then the secondary, we talked a little bit about it. Efficient's Brysock. I mean, it's just like Kevin King and Keith Taylor all over again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just don't see those kind of rangy. You have to go back to when Jimmy Lake was recruiting these guys. Mm-hmm. He was recruiting a guy like Brysock. That's the kind of guy he was looking for. So you look at him, it was interesting. I think Jordan Shaw was used more outside today than in the slot where when he was at Indiana, he was used more as a slot guy, even though he only played four games to preserve his red shirt. So I thought that was interesting. It looked like basically between Prysock, Thaddeus Dixon, Elijah Jackson, and then Devon Banks was right in the middle there as well. Leroy Bryant was right in there as well.
I saw Bryant over the slot a few times.
Yeah, he was moving around too. It looked like McCutcheon may have been the number one guy they were looking at slot. It was hard to tell.
Well, he was the first guy who said he was coming back, so they had to reward him, right?
right, exactly. Caleb Presley was doing more conditioning stuff.
Yeah, he wasn't. He wasn't out there. Curly Reed didn't do a lot on the full team sessions.
Yeah, it's an individual. But I'll tell you what, he's another guy that stands out physically. Yeah. He just looks the part.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's 6'1", 195 or something. He looks the part. He looks great.
Speaking of which, Elias Johnson, 2024 signee, was on the field, on the side of the field today, watching practice. And I got a chance to just chat with him for a second, and I said, when was the last time you walked on the field in your position group and you weren't the tallest guy? Because he's 6'3".
Right.
And he's like, I don't know if it's happened since I was like in junior high.
Yeah.
And then I hit my growth spurt, and I've always been the tallest guy in any position I ever played. And now he's 2 inches shorter than, Prysock is easily 6'4".
Yeah.
And you know, he's not quite 6'3". He's like 6'2½ for Elias Johnson. And so he's going to be looking up to him. You know, it's – and Curly Reed's probably right there too.
Yeah, but again, Elias Johnson, I mean, he's a guy that Jimmy Lake would have recruited.
Yeah.
Flat out. I mean, that's just the kind of body types that he was looking for ever since guys like Kevin King, ever since guys like Keith Taylor, Jordan Miller, guys like that. You know, those are the guys that he liked. So, and then at safety, it started out with Cam Fab and Mikella Steen. And I think he was backed up. I'll tell you what, here's another guy, the true freshman, Peyton Waters.
Oh, yeah, he looked good.
High-waisted, ran great.
Yeah.
Just runs. I mean, he looks the part already. Mm-hmm. He was there with Dunn, mm-hmm. with Tristan Dunn. And so those four looked really, really good. And obviously – they'll want to add to that room at some point. So we'll see what happens with the portal.
Didn't see much of the specialists, so don't really have any
other than them going through the individual drills and doing the sleds. When I saw Jack McAllister doing the sled, I was like, okay. And then I did see Grady Gross out there. I obviously didn't know when, there was no kicking, like you said, but I did see Grady Gross out there. Does it look like Grady's slimmed down a little bit?
Yep. Yeah, he was a little on the chunkier side last year, but He's definitely he's like, hey, I'm hitting a lot of kicks. I'm gonna get some chicks.
There you go.
Well, hit kicks, get chicks.
There's a proud history of chunky kickers at all levels.
Yes. Sebastian Janikowski.
Throughout the years. Yeah. So but I just didn't I happened to see him on the far end of the field and I was like, is that 95?
Yeah.
It's a little harder to read his numbers than it used to be. So good on Grady. No, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. So let's wrap it up, Scott. Any final thoughts from a kind of an eventful first day, but at the same time,
weird.
Another day where it was just getting back to basics.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird feel. I'm used to being out here in the morning. I'm used to, you know, getting all this done. So it's taken a little bit getting used to. But no, it's fun to be back actually out covering football rather than talking about portal and coaches leaving and all this different stuff. That's all stuff that we can talk about later on. Right now it's all about football and it's going to be fun. I saw some really good players out there. I'm really interested to see how they develop, how they fit in things. Steve Bilichick, you know, the way he was wandering around in the different groups and everything like that. There was times when I was just like, I don't even know if he knows where he belongs right now.
He threw more passes for a defensive coordinator in one day than I think I've ever seen a defensive coordinator throw in like a career.
When they were doing the defensive back, drills, back pedal drills and things like that. Yeah.
He was just throwing like 30-yard rainbows for like days.
That's going to be real interesting to watch how he develops his way of doing things. You know, I mean, he's on a whole new staff. He's not linked to a position group. Didn't he coach the linebackers before or something like that?
He coached DBs.
Yeah,
he coached
DBs. That's right. Okay.
So, but like Vinny Sunseri coached the running backs at New England last year, and now he's a safeties coach. Another guy that was pretty unassuming out there today. Now, Robert Bala, linebacker.
Not unassuming.
He's more like Inge.
Yeah.
He went very distinctive tenor, tone to his voice. So when he was starting to emote, like, oh, okay, that's Coach Bala. Yeah. We know that sounds like him.
Yeah. So,
Steve Bilichick, probably the most unassuming defensive coordinator I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. Just out there with a hoodie and shorts and just throwing footballs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's the defensive coordinator?
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Yeah, well, somebody actually said to me that he looked like somebody who didn't know, who didn't belong. Like, if you lined up all the coaches and you said, one of these kids doesn't belong here, you know, who is it?
Well, no,
you know?
Okay, so we estimated there was probably about 100 people out here today, fans. Mm-hmm. If we took all 100 of those fans and we just picked out a certain five-minute segment of practice, just like a 5-minute segment where the guys are running around, coaches are coaching, doing their thing, and all of them are out there, and you have your choice of picking which guy you think Steve Belichick is, I'm thinking half those people wouldn't have been able to get it.
No.
It's just he is so unassuming.
Mm-hmm.
He just fits into the crowd. Like he looks like he's one of the student trainers out there.
Yep, he does.
It's the weirdest thing, and I'm not judging it. The guy's pedigree speaks for itself. I mean, the guy's played for amazing teams. He's coached amazing defenses. He's schemed amazing defenses. He's called amazing games on defense at the NFL level. But you go out there and watch him, and you go see him do how he does his business. I mean, like, you're going, that's him?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
You know, it's like that long thing about meeting your idols. It's like, wait, that's not who I've seen on the TV. You can't be you.
I know.
That's not you. Yeah. And he's like, no, that's me. So I thought that was really, really interesting. Yeah. So we'll wrap it up with that. And just the first one. We've got 14 more of these to go.
Well, 13 technically, because we don't get
but
the
spring
Wednesday.
Game ain't gonna be spring no, game's not gonna be spring game.
I know, but we don't get the Wednesday before
that's true.
Spring game.
That's true. So, well, so technically there is 14 more of these, but we're only going to get to see
13 more
of these. So,
and fans aren't allowed at that practice either. So there's one practice that fans aren't allowed at.
Right. But again, it's for those that are planning to come out either tomorrow or Saturday. Now, Saturday should be better because it's more midday.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, for those Washington fans coming out for the afternoon practices, you know, plan on bundling up because once the shadows come into the bowl – in Husky Stadium, it gets cold fast.
And we had the reverse. It got warmer as practice went along in the morning when we did the morning practices.
Right.
It got, because the sun would start hitting us and everything like that, and it was better. But then today it was warm at the beginning. Oh, no, I shouldn't say warm, but it was warmer. And then, oh, man, that wind started coming through east to west. I was like, wow, it's cold out here.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's go.
Yep, so just bundle up and be prepared. But hopefully you guys will come out and have a great time. See some fun practices because it's definitely going to be fun to watch these guys in spring, though. So for Scott Eklund, I'm Chris Fetters of Dogman.com. Go Dogs.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.